Bonk.
Dan.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've been less confused in my life than I am
at
this
surprising,
particular moment.
Because you're generally a very confused person.
I frequently get confused.
You go through life not really knowing much of what's going on most of the time.
No. In fact, should we just address the elephant in the room that there is a third person in the zone with us and I have no idea
why
he's here?
There's a third person
here? Yeah, look, don't let him know. Yeah, nope, crap.
Yes, hello. Mike Mahardy. How's it going?
I am doing well. Mike, you are the first return guest
yes.
on Panning the Stream.
It's a high honor.
Yeah, we
or
did.
Or a low honor.
Whoa. We did the John Travolta as
Gotti.
Gotti.
Oh my
yes.
God, that movie was amazing.
Yeah.
That was a real terrible one. Yeah, we've had Tom Monda on,
mm-hmm.
we've had my father on, we've
mm-hmm.
had Ben Hansen on,
mm-hmm.
So we've had some guests before, but yeah, the first repeat. And also, the first to join us here in the Pizone.
It's a very nice setup.
Yeah, you like it?
Your whole apartment in Connecticut is very just optimized for a lot of, like, showmanship.
No, thank you. Yes, yeah. We are adjacent to the studio, which we did some streaming from last night,
yeah.
which was a lot of fun. Put some Time Splitters and some Spelunky and Tony Hawk and stuff, and then we watched Kickboxer, which that's not what we're talking about this week, but
no.
Let's just say Kickboxer on Amazon Prime Video.
Oh, yeah.
Worth watching.
I'll watch it again at some point in my life.
There's some good montages going on there.
It's very good.
I will say, I feel like usually the Pizone is crowded with the dogs here,
mm-hmm.
and I thought with another full human that it would be extremely crowded, but I'm quite comfortable here.
Yeah, this actually works fine.
It's ample room.
Because of the added human, we tried putting the dogs out in the living room, and they were making weird ghost sounds. So if you heard weird dog ghost sounds coming through the walls, that's what's going on here. But yeah, this works. This is a cozy little podcast nook. It really is like the perfect size, I think, for this.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
The next decal you should get is like a fireplace decal on the wall here.
Oh,
real cozy.
That'd be good. I could get that one of those
Instead
like bad
of real
ads.
Yeah.
Okay. I could look into that for sure. Okay. Do we get into the thing? Yes. And the answer is yes, we should get into the thing that
here.
We watched. I'm Thinking of Ending Things is the name of the movie. That we just watched. The reason this is coming in a little hot this week is because it just came out. So if you're hearing this when we put it out, it was probably a few hours after we were sitting here in this closet because we just watched it. It got a lot of hype. That is why we wanted to cover it in a timely fashion. I don't even know where to start. This is the first time I think I've gone into one of these where I have not had notes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I usually am taking notes and like, okay, I got a lot of stuff to cover. And there is a lot to cover. There is a lot
yeah.
to talk about, but I think we just need to parse this out as a trio here.
Coherent notes are kind of futile with, I would say, most Charlie Kaufman movies, but especially this one. I don't know. What is your history with Charlie Kaufman movies, both of you? You've seen a bunch, I'm assuming.
Love Malkovich.
Yeah, I've seen Being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
I never saw Adaptation, though I want to.
Adaptation's really good. I really liked, back in the day, this comedy called Human Nature. It was with Patricia Arquette and Tim Robbins and Peter Dinklage. No one ever seemed to see it, but I remember thinking it was hilarious back then. But that was Charlie Kaufman. What else did he do?
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I love that one.
Oh, okay.
He also did Synecdoche, New York.
Okay, I never saw that.
Which...
That's Philip Seymour Hoffman, right?
Correct, yeah. Prior to this movie, I would say that was his more obtuse one. Or not obtuse, like opaque. It was just... I actually didn't like that movie. I really liked I'm Thinking of Ending Things. I mean, it's a tough movie to assess
yes.
an hour after you've seen it, but mm-hmm. it's, like most of his movies, it is very, very... Synecdoche felt too self-indulgent. Like, it felt like, I was like, okay, Charlie, chill out. But this one I actually kind of really enjoyed.
Well, yeah, Bonk, would you say you enjoyed it too? Because, like, I think I enjoyed watching it at many points.
Mm-hmm.
It made me laugh. I liked the performances a lot. The directing was good. Would you say you like this movie? Like, I don't even know how to rate this.
It's hard to say. It's hard to quantify my feelings on it. I feel like it was kind of exhausting at some points. When something was actually happening, like when they were going towards the house, when they first got to the house, when they were leaving the house, it was very interesting. But like, it just like wore out its welcome in certain times. Like the whole school sequence was a total just total mess. Like the not a mess, but in my mind it's a mess. And by the time they got to like the cake while they were eating dinner, it was a little like, all right, we can move on to something else.
We get weird stuff going on in this house.
That being said, my expectation going into any movie is that something's going to happen, and when it just dwells and just this constant perspective shift, and not even perspective shift, it's like character shift.
Just weird stuff is happening all the time.
It seems like, and I don't know, Mike. I defer to you if this is what your interpretation was like. It seems like the girl wasn't actually there because she kept changing constantly. And at the one point at the end when she's like, and the only reason I'm saying this is just because I honestly don't know, and that's why I'm trying to figure out now what happened. But at the one point, like in the end, when she's talking to the janitor and she talks about Jake, like just one of the mosquitoes that bit you 4 years ago, it made me think like their interaction at that trivia night where they met. Like, in his mind, obviously, it was important, but for her, it was just a fleeting, like, oh, this guy's a creep, I just want him to leave me alone, and they never went anything beyond that. But in his mind, he, like, you know, he had this whole image of her, and he, like, saw, you know, had this relationship with her.
Yeah, he took her to meet his parents and stuff, and saw them, like, getting married and stuff in the future, which, I guess, let's just boil it down to the absolute, like, just structure of what this movie is. It is, I've never seen this actress before. Have you?
No.
Okay, I'm not familiar with her. But she was really good. I thought she was awesome. But it basically goes with, like, her and this guy that Bonk was talking about here, who's the guy that looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Jesse Plemons,
that's the guy.
Breaking Bad. He's in a lot now. He's actually one of the more, like, better actors that I just see everywhere but never really think about until I see him.
It's a good
he's
always really good.
He's a really good creeper. Like, yeah. Remember in that Game
Date
Night?
Game Night.
Was it Game Night? Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah, see, he's always, like, really good, but I always forget about him until he's there.
Yeah, and, like, he's, like, a sociopath in Breaking Bad, and he plays that really well. Just kind of that stone-faced dude.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the two main characters. I should look up who this actress is. But her, and actually, that's going to drive me nuts if I don't look this up. Starring Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley. Okay, so I've never seen Jesse Buckley before, but these two are dating. They've been dating for like 7 weeks. They go on a long car ride to meet his parents on a farm in Oklahoma. They're there. A bunch of weird stuff happens. His parents are like aging, so it's like with no like fades or anything. It's basically like the mom, Toni Collette, will be like, you know, 35, and then the next scene she'll be 50, and then she'll be like on a deathbed. So a bunch of
weird
shit.
But then she'll be 30 again.
Exactly. So a bunch of weird time shit is going on in the house, and then they leave, then they have a long drive, and they go to an ice cream place in the middle of the night. It's weird there. And then they go to a high school, and there's a janitor, and everything turns into a play for a bit, and then there's a cartoon pig, and then there's a weird award ceremony and play, and it's over. So that's the basic structure. So if you hear us, if you're listening to this episode and you have not seen the movie, that's the basic core structure there that we're talking about.
The one constant, the one thing that doesn't shift, like I said earlier, was Jake, which makes me think that this is all kind of through his perspective. And reflecting on it now, I feel like him seeing all the varying versions of his parents is because when he sees his parents, he sees his collective experience with them, every version that he's had with them, all the memories that he has attached to them and everything. So that, you know, obviously includes when she was, when his mom was young and like serving him dinner and cleaning the house, and to when she was like decrepit, and same with the father.
So in the present, are we seeing, because at the end, Jesse Plemons is like old and accepting this award. Is that the present?
The curious thing, though, is they didn't have old actors during that. It was a bunch of young people painted wrinkles.
Which is really weird, because they obviously had really good, like, aging effects people, because when they're doing stuff with Toni Collette and his father on the farm, like, it looks awesome. It's really good. They look decades different.
I almost wonder if that part was, like, completely removed from reality, because it seemed like he was getting a Nobel Prize and then acting out a scene from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Oklahoma itself. So I read up about the book, and I don't have to get into it yet, because I think it's more interesting to actually talk about it in general, removed from the book. But I read up about the book, what it's about, like synopsis wise, by Ian Reid, a Canadian author from 2016. He wrote it. It's his debut novel, but that shed light on what was going on. However, like again, like any Charlie Kaufman movie, I feel like the first time you see it, it's just you're along for the ride.
I don't know if I'd watch it again right now.
No, I don't know that I would watch it immediately, but, like, to your point, Bianca, even this movie, like, some of the car conversations, as hilarious as they were, I was like, all right, let's get somewhere, let's go, mm-hmm. let's do something. It was just the opposite of action in a lot of it.
And
Not action in the genre sense, but action in the literal sense.
Yeah, I feel like, just for example, early on when Lucy is reciting that really long poem, mm-hmm. at that point, like, I wasn't aware of what was going on, and it was just like, okay, this is, she's like a very brooding, depressed woman. And then when it shifts to a different version of her, and then that version is going into stuff, like, going on about random stuff, it's like, well, I don't, this is, like, so exhausting, I don't really care about this, because I know it's just going to shift anyway. If she was this, you know, if it was a consistent character, you'd kind of be in for that, but if you know it's just going to get tossed around, and then you realize that it's just a figment of his imagination anyway, there's so much time spent on a lot of words that... They're meaningful, but I don't think they pertain necessarily to what's going on in the movie.
Yeah, I actually think the most I was into this movie was the beginning. I feel like it's like a 20-minute scene of them driving to the parents' house.
It's the most, like, linear part of it.
Yeah, it's just them, and it's just, there's nothing weird going on yet. It's basically just a couple that's not right for each other in an awkward situation, and I thought the dialogue was really good. I thought, you know, she did a really good job of being, like, kind of playing that, like, why am I doing this?
Have you ever had a car ride like that?
Oh, yeah. Plenty of them, especially through blizzards.
Really?
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Definitely. And it's like, that. At that point, I don't think the movie had, like, desensitized me yet to, like, be used to the weird shit. So still really funny. Like, the dark humor was landing more heavily for me because it wasn't just all dark humor yet.
Yeah, that's why it was the ride back that I was just like, that one felt longer. And also, at that point, it's been nothing but weird shit for a while. And it's just like, I felt like her voice was changing at times. There's this long thing about they're talking about some movie they saw and some actress and how good she was in the role. And they're, like, arguing about that. And then all of a sudden, she would be, like, a different person. She would be someone from, like, a movie that, like, it cuts to a janitor in a high school at one point where he's watching a movie about, like, a rom-com in a diner, and then it shows a full end credits thing, like, directed by Robert Zemeckis.
Oh, that's the thing. I think that the movie heavily implied that the janitor is Jake.
That's what I was wondering. And so I was thinking that at the end, because it goes into this big musical number in the high school, because, like, there's this janitor in a high school, and he sees this kind of, like, idealized, like, you know, these, like, really, like, attractive dancer versions of, you know, him and his girlfriend, like, dancing through the halls and playing through their lives and everything. And I thought it was just like, okay, so this is all in the janitor's head. This is how he viewed his life, or it's, like, his memories or whatever as he's dying. But then we see the old version of Jake accepting the award at the end, and it's Jesse Plemons.
Why not? Yeah, why not use the actual elderly actor you have?
Yeah, so it's like, was that him? Or is that how he sees himself? Does he see himself as the younger version of himself and not him as he actually is, old?
So the thing that clued me in, I actually did not know anything about the play Oklahoma up until I watched Watchmen, finally, HBO, last summer, and Oklahoma figured into that in many ways, but the play itself. So the scene at the end of, or toward the end, the ballet scene, like, dream sequence where that janitor comes, a different janitor,
right,
like an actor,
comes
in with and kills the Jake character.
Right.
That is from Oklahoma. There's a dude in Oklahoma who lives, he's pretty much like the groundskeeper. He lives in a shed and he's like the lonely, brooding, like, again, like he's wasting his life away. At one point in the play, and like you wouldn't think this to just think about Oklahoma, the main character goes to that dude's shack because that dude is interested in the love interest, and he pretty much, the main character, the hero, tells that guy, he's like, you should pretty much just kill yourself. So again, there's like the Oklahoma stuff is what kind of clued me into what was going on. And again, like, I think it's not about like what's real and what's not, but it was very much like the Oklahoma stuff was what was landing with me, because I just looked up a lot of Oklahoma stuff after I watched Watchmen.
Huh.
But, gotcha. So like, my thing is, going into the movie, you hear, I'm thinking of ending things, and obviously the opening monologue, you think it's her talking about getting ready to end the relationship, and like the movie feels very much about, like, I thought it was just commenting on how, and she like goes into it as much, like how tough it is to get out of like a shitty relationship, or just a like a dead relationship. And then it was like maybe the parents weren't real, and she was like, that was her projecting into what they would be like in 60 years, and then all these different side characters that came in, but the entire time I was also, was like, I think I was trying too hard to figure out what is real and what wasn't. But I felt, again, I like the movie, but I do feel like half the time it felt like a puzzle to be deciphered, and the other time it's like, no, you don't need to. And again, like, maybe it's not like a one thing fits all for the entire movie, but I was definitely like, I wish I could go into it like kind of like Eternal Sunshine, the first time I watched it, it was like, you don't realize it's a puzzle until the very end. This movie felt like it was kind of challenging me to figure stuff out the whole time, which got exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kept waiting for weird stuff to happen, and, like, it's pretty straightforward for, like, most of the first half hour, even after they get to the house. It's, like, awkward for a bit, but it's not, like, you know, weird, surreal stuff. And then, Bonk, you noticed that, like, her hair changed. The girl's hair changed. Lucy, right?
Toni Collette did, too, I think.
Right.
Like, when Lucy was talking about her, she was doing her monologue about, she was describing to Richard Thewlis, I forget his first name, the dude who played the dad, he was Professor Lupin in the Harry Potter movies too, but she was describing like, but the painting itself can be sad. He's like, how do I know it's a sad painting if there's not a person in it looking sad?
Yeah.
Which is, again, that was, I was still laughing and all this shit at that point. But when they panned up, Toni Collette was all of a sudden super old, and that's when she, who was just phenomenal at this, just, you could slowly start to unhinge. I was like, oh my god, this is, again, there were some of, like, horror tropes, like the basement that you don't go in, that it felt like it was playing with, that I was like, is this a, what is going on? Is it a thriller? Is this, is someone here? Is there some tragedy I'm missing, or I'm, that we're building up to? Which I guess that was kind of the case, but yeah, I don't know. The dinner scene itself felt very, like, what was it? Exterminating Angel. It was a Boonwell's movie where it's just like the whole plot is a bunch of people who go to a dinner party and they just can't leave the room. It's like, it's pretty much like a horror thriller. There's no reason they can't leave the room. They just can't. And that's like the whole plot. They did kind of like a reboot recently. I think it was called Dinner Party. And there was like a few other characters in LA up in the hills. But the entire time I was like, I really enjoyed the horror tropes, but I don't think it was necessarily a horror movie in the end.
Yeah,
I feel like kind of most of these things didn't really go anywhere, or I certainly didn't even understand it by the end. And not in a way that makes me want to watch it again.
Well, yeah, I mean, now that, you know, I've sat through it all and can look at it in its totality, I don't think it was necessarily about, like I said earlier, my expectation going to any movie is that something's going to happen. I don't think it was about something happening. I think it was more a showcase of this guy's, like, you know, messed up mind.
So, like, what do you make of the part where she's looking at the picture and it looks like a young version of herself, and then it looks like him? Like, do you...
I don't know.
So, I mean, do you feel like a lot of stuff, like, do you think it's one of these things where, like, Charlie Kaufman or the author of the book, they, you know, every one of these weird things has, like, a story or a meaning behind it? Or do you think it's kind of just, like, a scattershot, like, hey, things ain't right here?
So that's the thing. So, again, after, like, looking up what the book is about and thinking back... I think a lot of, while some things are definitely meant to clue you in on what's happening, and Charlie Kaufman's not really big on, he himself has said, like, he hates twists in movies, but there kind of was a twist, but anytime something like that happened, it felt like it was less a literal thing. So my whole thing is, anytime you see the janitor, the actual janitor, that's all literal, that's real. It's a janitor working at a high school who's very, very lonely. He knows the school really well. When Jesse pulls up into the parking lot, he's like, 130 classrooms, one gymnasium, like, he knows the school, it's because he's the janitor. So that's right. That's when I was like, okay, so this is either actual young Jake or just his projection of himself. But, like, you pointed out when she's talking about, it's like a mosquito that bit me 40 years ago. I was like, oh, okay, so my interpretation was, this is him being super lonely, looking back in his life, wondering what would have happened with this girl, and that's why her name was changing, and, like it went from Yvonne to Louisa. Her job changed. Again, she was a waitress, like she was in the movie, but then she was a physicist, but then she was a poet, but then she had an essay due on Wednesday. So it's like, he was kind of projecting, or he was imagining what his life would have been like. When Toni Collette, right before she tells Lucy, or whatever you want to call her, to go do the laundry in the basement, again, that was one thing where she was talking about, she's like, yeah, he has this tendency to control things, and the more and more people that he blocks out of his life, the more and more important the people that are in his life become to him. But he becomes more controlling because he wants to keep them there and he doesn't know how else to communicate. I was like, oh, this is the janitor. That's like why the janitor is very lonely now. Like, he's actually looking back at what went wrong emotionally. And then when she went into the basement, I think he actually literally as a janitor lives in that house.
Right.
That's why the overalls were in the washer. He's ashamed of it. It's in the basement. He doesn't want this dream girl to go down there because, I don't know, he's embarrassed, but...
So do you think, because there's a part where, you know, she's getting phone calls throughout the movie and, like, not picking it up, and it says different names on it. It says Yvonne and, like, all these different female names, and when she picks up, finally, you do hear the janitor's voice, just kind of, like, weird stream of consciousness. So do you think that that's, like... a sign that he is, like, thinking back on these different women that he maybe dated, like Yvonne or whatever, and, like, whenever there's a call, that's him, like, thinking back on something, since it's, like, him reminiscing on his past?
I thought it was... The weird thing about the calls, too, was that it was the, landline telephone ring.
I thought that was weird, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then what do you make of the stuff where it's, like, she's a painter, and when she's talking at the dinner table, but then, and she shows some of her paintings to the parents, but then we find out there's like these photos of landscapes from like 1976 that are down in the basement, and the whole long poem that she recited at the beginning in the car was actually from a book he had.
Well,
as
I think
a kid.
That's like, because her being an amalgam of his imagination, like he's applying things that he's familiar with to her, like she's responsible for these paintings. They're paintings that he knows, obviously, because they're on posters in his basement. She wrote this poem, and it's a poem, obviously, that he knows because it's in a book that he read.
And his mom, when she was on the deathbed, or I guess in the middle of the movie when she was dying before she came back as a younger woman, she was talking about how he had the pin on, the diligence pin that he got. She was saying like how he was always really hardworking. He didn't have much natural talent. I took that as like, yeah, he wanted to be a painter, or he admired that in people who had that talent. So again, like you said, it was like that's, she was the microcosm of that talent in general. The one thing when she was sort of just kind of switching between characters, when she started smoking, and she was talking about the John Cassavetes movie, Woman Under the Influence, and they were talking about Mabel, and there was, like, this woman who was kind of, to everybody else, was becoming unhinged, and it was ruining her relationships with people around her. I was like, is that what this is about? But she was reminding me of Pauline Kael, the film critic, and apparently the thing that she was reading Pauline Kael's review out loud of Woman Under the Influence, when she was talking about whoever played Mabel, she's talking about her performance, and when they were looking through Jake's stuff, Pauline Kael, one of her review collections, I think it's called For Keeps, which I own, that's why I recognize it, it was on his bookshelf, so that kind of plays into that too. It's like, so this is all like he's pulling stuff like that he knows to maybe, like, again, like, maybe he's just imagining the women he could have ended up with, or, like, women that, like, you know, in his fragile psyche would have saved him, quote-unquote. Like, Pauline Kael, this tough, like, intelligent, critical, hard-smoking woman, like, from the 60s. That's when I was kind of like, is he just shifting, like, between, like...
The actress from the movie he was watching?
Yeah, like...
Well, she also, like, her voice changes a bit when she's doing the, like, movie critic thing. And, like, that would make sense if it was, like, you know, a critic from back then or whatever. Because she does sound more old-timey. Because she sounds very, like, Minnesotan at the beginning, you know. And then she sounds totally different in the car going back.
Yeah, and that was when it was... I think you go in and you think she is the center of the movie. But then you realize it's like, oh, it felt like... I don't. Maybe his parents actually did die and he had to watch his mom die. And, I feel like... It seemed like his mom was the only one who gave him approval throughout life, and he was, or at least that was the way I was reading it. So either they did die and he lives there, or he's still taking care of them mainly. But toward the end, it became something where I was like, okay, now he's seeing this ballet play out. Someone gets stabbed in the musical. Did that actually happen? But I was like, apparently in the book, I'm thinking of ending things. You slowly realize he's thinking about suicide, which. In this movie, it wasn't especially clear if he killed himself. However, he goes into the truck and he's having that like mental break.
Yeah.
He's taking his clothes off and he's like hyperventilating. The very last shot of the movie when the credits come up is the snow, the truck covered in snow.
Yeah, so would he have died? Like, there's no part where we see him like take anything or anything. He seems kind of like panicked, but do you think he's just like...
Well, he does like one version of him does die at the end in the auditorium, the dancer version of him.
Right. Like, so do you think he's dying, and the whole movie is kind of just, like, his brain as he's dying, and then, like, this idealized version of what he could have become when he's accepting that prize at the end, and he pictures everyone kind of in their prime but old in the crowd?
I mean, I feel like that makes it so much more linear than it is. Like, why would you be thinking about that ice cream place if you're imagining an idealized version of yourself before you die? Like, what was the deal with that ice cream place? I was so confused.
Yeah,
what was going on in the back if it wasn't varnish?
Oh, right, the smell thing. And the girls that are working there, the mean girls, they were the ones in the hallway in the actual, like, so I don't know if he's seeing, like,
they're on the stage in the Oklahoma rehearsal in real life, quote unquote, at the beginning when he's cleaning the floor, like the lead actor, she looks down and sees, she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and then he's imagining her in the, like, actual ice cream thing where they pull over, it's like the middle of the night, the ice cream place is open, and then they show like an actual animated commercial as he's kind of dying. Like, yeah, I feel like it's like his brain just firing a bunch of memories and stuff as he's dying, you know?
Right.
And like mixing him up and getting things wrong, and, you know,
which kind of figures into if he is having a mental break and, like, committing suicide, I guess, like, your memories would be fractured and kind of non-linear and...
And just kind of a big jumble,
basically.
When I think about this movie, I think that's how I'm going to picture it, is, like, okay, this old guy's dying, and we're kind of seeing his screwed-up brain as he's dying, kind of go through a bunch of like messed up, nonlinear
regrets,
memories, what could have been. You know, actually, as we've been sitting here talking about it, I think I maybe appreciate this more than like when it first ended. You know,
yeah, I agree. The more I reflect on it,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to watch it again.
No.
But
the funny thing is that like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is one of my favorite movies. I think a lot of that's one of those movies that like a lot of people say and they think they're the only one, but then everybody else is like, yeah, I know, it's a really good, I don't know. I was talking about this.
I really like Fight Club. I'm an individual and I think Fight Club was cool.
I had this literal conversation with someone the other night. It's like, you're the only one who discovered boba tea. Like, okay, yeah, whatever. But
have you guys seen The Matrix and really thought about it?
Like, really thought about it a few times. But he the thing with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is like the perfect example of like the shitty manic pixie dream girl quote where she comes into this loner's life and saves him. And again, I love the movie, but it really kind of becomes that. And Charlie Kaufman has gotten shit for that. Between Eternal Sunshine and Synecdoche kind of had that as well. But this felt almost like an answer to that. It's like this, again, this old dude who's lonely and like very controlling, and a bunch of the scenes with like Jesse Plemons, the way he's very good at just, again, becoming creepy all of a sudden, but the baby it's cold outside conversation,
oh,
I was
yeah.
like, what is going to happen when they pull into the parking lot? She's pointing out to him, she's like, hey, you know, that song's kind of like rapey.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I get it. And it's like, again, it's like him saying to himself, he's like, yes, I know I've been controlling. And like, I think this is how someone would have put me in my spot. It felt very much like the characters that he was conjuring in his mind that would have, like, if he had actually flirted with her at that trivia night, as opposed to being kind of socially awkward, or the mosquito that bit her 40
yeah.
years ago, it's almost like he's imagining, what if, like, this manic pixie dream girl, and again, I'm using the phrase, like, ironically, but what if she did come into my life, and then he's like, no, that's shitty, she wouldn't have saved me, and, like, that's how I took that.
And I feel like that drive back and everything, I think we're seeing a lot of different memories of, like, a whole relationship play out in one car ride, where it's like, here's the part where they get in a fight about a thing, here's the part where they have a fun little thing, they sing a little song about the ice cream place, it's just like a bunch of things that are just like kind of what's the word, abridged,
yeah.
just like, here's the good times, here's the bad times, here's
right.
the fights, you know, like all
also
those.
Did you notice like the only two locations are that house and the high school, which like as the janitor, I mean, he lives in that house because you see him
oh,
there
yeah.
in
the road
in the road yeah.
yeah
and he, you know, drives to the high school and he's in the high school,
yeah.
So, like, it's got a small life. So, if he was reflecting on his whole, like, the whole of his experiences, it makes sense that it would just kind of revolve around this one fleeting interaction that he had with someone.
And also the fact that, like, in this, assuming it is kind of a fantasy, him and Lucy came from the city. And every time she wants to go home, she's like, no, I want to go back to my house. And then he, assuming, like, these characters are all just kind of parts of his psyche, like, he keeps mumbling, but yeah, back to the farmhouse. It's like he never escaped his small town, and like this physicist poet girlfriend would have been the one to save him and pull him into the city or something.
Huh.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So then, but to go back to your question, I have no clue what was going on with the, I mean, it was like a Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
It felt like he really just clung to the nostalgia of the commercial and
yeah.
the place, and maybe he did just go there as a kid
a lot.
Yeah.
yeah. So I think that's the thing, is he has this fond memory, and that's why that's kind of coming to his mind as he's dying or whatever. But also, it seems like he didn't have a very eventful life, but the things that did stand out to him kind of played out at the end here, specifically the pig, because he talks about how the pigs in the barn basically they, at one point, they thought they were sleeping for a long time and not eating, but it turns out the whole underside was like getting eaten alive by maggots. And so at the end there, when he's kind of having a mental breakdown in the high school, he kind of sees a hallucination of this cartoon pig just kind of walking him through the halls. And it's like, well, he didn't have that eventful of a life, but that was like obviously a big memory of his childhood or something. And so that's kind of firing as he's dying.
And that's what I thought he did die, because once he starts seeing a cartoon pig and it walks him in, he's naked. That felt like a transitionary, like go to, you know, the afterlife life. With this thing that you're like Rosebud, so to speak. That your that maggoty pig was your Rosebud.
Spirit guide.
But then the last, I think he was accepting like a Nobel Prize or something in that fantasy.
Yeah.
And he was looking out, and of course, all these characters with the wrinkles painted on were the same girls from the play, aka the Dairy Queen or whatever it was called. I forget the name of it, and he said it a lot, but it was like almost like
Tulsi Town.
Tulsi Town, thank you. And he was super creepy when he sang that song in the car, by
yes,
the way.
Yes.
Jesse, again, he's really good. But it felt to me, and also when he was singing the thing, when he all of a sudden just like escalates, when he's like, it's a pack of lies!
Oh, yeah.
Got me when I was kind of fading.
Yeah.
But I felt like that tied in again to when Toni Collette was saying, like, he never had much ability, but he was a hard worker, and that was almost more impressive. Again, if that's kind of him thinking out loud, maybe that's how he's justifying not really developing talents.
Yeah, like, well, I did my job diligently, and yeah.
I guess, like, winning a Nobel Prize is the peak of achievement, so, like, maybe that was why he was... All the people from his life got to see him get one.
If he had utilized, like, his knowledge and intelligence in certain fields, like, if he would have actually applied himself more and been more ambitious, yeah. Man, I honestly think, just after like a half hour talking about this, I think I like this movie a lot more than when we first sat down.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think we have a general through line of what's going on here. I know one thing for certain, and I think I have never seen a movie in my life that I know my dad would hate more. I can see him, I can hear him be like, oh, we're in a house, they're old, they're young, there's a cartoon pig, nothing makes sense.
I would love to see that.
Oh my God, he would hate it so much.
During the ballet at the end in the high school, even I was like, okay, guys, just Charlie, again, relax.
Settle down.
We get it.
Yeah, when that was going on, I was like, okay, this is probably the end, this big weird thing of let's do a play through their life or whatever. And then it cuts to that weird acceptance ceremony. And it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I wonder, like, if the whole audience was supposed to be, like, part of the play, because they were all wearing the stage makeup. Like, that was the kind of stage makeup that you would see in, like, an opera.
Yeah.
Because that still confounds me why they... He also had that thing where he was talking. It was one of the moments where he was kind of like Jesse Plemons was breaking down in the car. He's saying like, they're lonely now. It's like a rot, and maybe that's like the rash on her arm because she was the lonely girl in the high school. Mm. Maybe that was like, I don't know. So like, he's like, they'll eventually grow up and it'll keep festering. So I was like, maybe it's all these kids he sees at school and he's just imagining them being older. So that's why they're painted as opposed to actually elderly characters. But again, that gets into questions like what was real and are you even supposed to care what was real and is that beside the point?
You know what I'm thinking? I just remembered. There's that one part where like the janitor is walking through the high school hallway and those two girls are like making fun of him. Are those the mean girls?
That would make sense.
In that case, that the whole audience, like with the exception of the parents are there, but everyone else is wearing elderly stage makeup because he wouldn't necessarily know what they look like as old people.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, because he would just be picturing how they aged and it would just be a weird cartoon version.
Yeah, the only thing that gives me pause, like thinking about it that way, is that the parents were also had that same makeup. But
that's true. God, what a weird thing.
It was real weird. Yeah. I feel like I could totally see why this was his Netflix movie, because I'm sure like with indie games are able to be more experimental.
Yeah.
Like he probably had more free reign to do whatever.
And I always appreciate that when like a director or an artist or something feels like they can just do an uncompromised version. We talked about this during Evangelion. Mike laughing about.
This is Charlie Kaufman's Death Stranding, but
no.
It worked out.
Yeah, it worked out this time.
Sorry, that's a separate podcast.
Yes. I know what you mean, Bob. Like, I just feel like he got to kind of do his thing and nobody told him no. That's got to be a good spot to be in as a screenwriter and director where it's like, I've had some hits, just let me do my thing.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix. Netflix throws money around.
Sometimes it works, but remember Magnolia?
Oh.
Do you ever see Magnolia?
Have I seen Magnolia?
Yeah.
Do you guys not like Magnolia?
Oh, we did not like so Magnolia.
Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, we did we did an episode on that. We love Boogie Nights. I love There Will Be Blood. Magnolia.
Oh,
boy.
I'm a douchebag. I like Magnolia a lot. I used to list it as like one of my favorite movies.
Really?
Yeah. But, oh, man. But like, again, that's a movie where it's like, I don't say that in public. People will draw kind of correct assumptions about me. Strike that. Cut that from this episode.
Nope, I'm going to repeat it. I'm going to loop it.
Yeah. Boogie Nights is better.
Oh, yeah. And There Will Be Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think we got to a good place with this movie.
Yeah.
I think we made peace with this, and I think I'm on my Letterboxd review, I think I'll give it a solid, maybe 3.
Yeah, and you know what? I feel like this was the perfect movie to have Mike as a guest on.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It was good to sit here and parse
it out. I feel like
out.
Most other people would just been like, oh, I hated this.
Let's do another episode with my dad watching.
Yeah. Oh, I would download that immediately.
He would be so mad for 2 hours.
Oh my God, that would actually be an amazing movie. Podcast.
It would be. I would just be like, sit down and be like, Dad, tell me what you just saw.
And that movie was, I felt, way too long. Like, I can't imagine, I almost didn't want to sit through all of it. And I was like, again, I'm a Charlie Kaufman apologist, I think is like the term.
Well, yeah, we were streaming until like 6 in the morning last night and didn't get a ton of sleep, so I was pretty tired watching it. And that long car ride on the way back,
yeah,
it's really going
my
one
eyes
thing,
were getting heavy.
Me too, and it's going just from one thing to another, and it's just not ending. I remember thinking like, okay, is this not making any sense because I'm really tired right now, or is this just like... But actually now talking about it, like I feel like we know what's going on there.
Those conversations and like most of this movie just seems like a dream project for the actors. It's like, hey, just go, you're going to do this whole... Like you mentioned it kind of, there's only a few locations. It felt like a play. It was like, there's only a few times the set changed. The rest is just these people interacting in this one space. And it's, oh my God, it felt like they had fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't always fun to just sit in on it.
Yeah.
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 I'm looking at Jessie Buckley's filmography, and she's done barely any movies ever. I haven't heard of any of these other ones. She was in Fargo, the TV show. Bonk, did you finish all those seasons?
I watched, if there's only 3 seasons still, then I watched.
Oh, she's in season 4, which is 2020.
I guess, okay.
So she's in that now. But yeah, oh, she was in Chernobyl. I never saw that. I know, Mike, you were a big fan
of that.
Was
she the nurse?
She was Ludmila Ignatenko?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Okay. I have seen her. I really like that that show.
Nice. I'm going to give a general thumbs up to this movie after talking about it. Like, I was, when the credits ended, I actually just started laughing out loud when the credits showed up because it's like, all right, well, that's the thing we watched, you know? But now it's like, okay, all right. Cool.
Oh, yeah. I was immediately very taken aback.
Yeah.
By the way, wasn't it directed by
Charlie Kaufman?
Because it said it was directed by David, what, some last name I didn't recognize at the end.
Really? Yeah, he directed it.
Joke thing. But remember, it didn't say it was directed by Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, weird. Okay. All right. Well, that is I'm Thinking of Ending Things. And we'll wrap up here with, first of all, thanks to all the patrons. If you go to patreon.com/paintingthestream. We keep it simple there. One $5 tier gets you early episodes. It gets you ad-free episodes. Gets you access to the Discord. And most importantly, it gets you your own personalized, written for you by Bonk. Bonk who? Bonk.
That's right, Daniel.
Do we have one for this week?
Yes, we do. This week, we're honoring our friend Jeff. Jeff is a great guy. It's Jeff with a J, so you know he knows what's what.
Yeah, yeah.
His parents aren't crazy people.
Geo bullshit.
Jeff, here's your Bonku. I have some bad news. Jeff stole your horse and left town. Good luck finding him.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Jeff, why did you do that? Well, you shouldn't be doing that, Jeff, but thank you for supporting Panning the Stream with the patron. Except for he's a good patron.
He's a good patron. He's got that J, but
horse
makes
thief.
Some questionable choices.
Horse thief, Jeff. Yes. Thank you so much for the support, Jeff, and to every patron and every listener of Panning the Stream. Mike, before we go, we have a thing we do at the end of each episode where we've got the Hugh game. You can see a card in my hand from the Hugh game box here, and it's just questions. It's not really much of a game. There's no winning. There's no losing. There's no points. I'm just going to ask a question here.
And I'm answering?
All of us.
Really? Oh, okay, cool.
It's a conversation
gotcha.
Starter.
Sweet.
Okay, if you could have 1 million of anything except money, what would you choose?
Wishes.
That's a bullshit.
I was very proud of that one.
A million? What would you do with 1 million wishes?
Beers.
Mike, 1 million wishes, Mahardy.
Yeah, that's me.
You get 1 million. Why didn't you just ask for 1 million beers?
I don't know. Yeah, if I'm going to use each wish on an individual beer, I might as well just go straight to the beers and cut out the middleman.
I would want 1 million acres.
Oh, that's an excellent. Is that like a state?
I don't know, but I would keep it and just preserve it and not let anyone develop on it.
Like a nature preserve?
Yeah.
That's a great answer. The first thing that came to my mind was Starburst.
Yeah, I was thinking candy.
Candy's pretty cheap. You could just buy as much of it as
well. Well, I know, but 1 million of something would take a lot of space. And like, unless it's like, oh, I have 1 million apartments that I can put stuff in. But then That's my million. I don't have something. I don't need the space if I have a million apartments. Yeah,
you're the only adult here. Yeah. I would like a million beers, I think. But they'd go bad once you're...
Yeah, I was going to say, would they go
like
flat?
200, the rest of 999,980.
Well, you keep them on the walls, bottles of beer.
Oh.
Yeah.
But then you'd need a million walls.
Oh, shit. Bonk, we love dogs. Is a million, is a million dogs too much?
It's too many dogs.
Too many dogs? Yeah. Really?
Three is too much.
Three is too much. Yeah, they would usurp us. They would have the control.
They would fill this entire apartment like floor to ceiling.
We would be helpless.
It wouldn't be good for the dogs either.
It would be bad for everyone.
It would be. All right. I think we got some good answers there. Mike, is there anything you would like to plug while you're here?
I have taken some time off recently, just from pretty much everything while I'm, kind of figuring out next steps, but I stream over at twitch.tv/EmmaHardy. I've been playing Prey.
So, spell that.
M-M-A-H-A-R-D-Y.
You got.
What the fuck? What was that?
For the record, for those listening, we play a game here while Mike's in town called Don't Get Got, which Ben Hansen recommended, which is you have a secret little thing of missions that you have to get people on. And so I have one. One of my missions was get a player to spell out their name, either first or last is fine. And I just tricked Mike Mahardy into spelling his last name. So I just completed the mission in Don't Get Got. Thank you, Mike.
For the record, I got Bianca at the beginning.
Yeah.
I had to get someone to read something off my hand written in pen, and I wrote Argentina and kind of just aimed it at her at the beginning of the recording. She's like, why did you write Argentina?
But it's very mysterious.
Yeah. But yeah, I stream over there. I've been playing Prey every Tuesday. Mary Kish and I play horror games. We've been doing Resident Evil, but we finished almost all of them, so now we're on Dead Space 2.
Have you guys done like Revelations and all that?
We did Revelations 1. 2 is one of the lost chapters of I can't say Knievel. It's the GameSpot title. Knini. Nice. But we have a couple of campaigns in Resident Evil 6 yet to do. But right now, she's about to finish Dead Space 2. If you're listening to this, then we're coming up on the finale.
How did she handle the scene?
She is not... That's going to be in the finale. I forgot how late in the game that is.
Oh, it's late? Yeah. Okay.
She's chapter 14 out of 15.
Got it.
Is it the...
Yeah.
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 I was tweeting about it the other night. I thought she would get there.
I saw you guys tweeting about it, and that's what made me think of it. Yeah. That's it takes a lot to kind of get me squirm in terms of like violent stuff in games, and that one got me like, oh, boy.
Yeah, it's bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So, like I said, I play a lot of strategy games, too. Lately, I've been playing Total War Warhammer 2. I might bring that onto the stream at some point. Or I might keep that off stream, just keep it a personal thing. And Crusader Kings 3 is also something I want to play on stream, because that game is great.
Excellent.
What you got in your pocket, Mike? What's in that little pocket?
On your shirt? He's got a pocket on his shirt.
What's in the pocket?
Is this... Oh, I thought... Oh, nothing's in my pocket.
Sure.
Because you've asked me this before.
I know, but I want to
ask you.
Give me
a look like this is a got thing.
No, it's not.
When you have an active game of Don't Get Got going, every time somebody asks you anything, you have that thing of like, but you can't call them out on it because if you call them out on like a, hey, is this a Don't Get Got? And it's not, you lose a mission.
I think I just.
No,
he brought it up, but it wasn't a full. I think it needs to be more definitive.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of pocketed shirts. In fact, every shirt I've worn recently is pocket. I don't know why. I never use it. It's just there.
Something to think about.
It elevates a regular t-shirt into something a little bit extra.
Definitely. That's what I'm going for.
Well, Mike, I think you can hear a dog barking out there. That probably came through on the mic. I think they've been freaking out. They don't like not being in the zone, it turns out. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Yes, thank you for having me for the second time. It's been fun both times, and I really enjoyed talking about that movie.
Talking helps.
It did. I think I enjoyed talking about it more than I enjoyed watching it. Although, I liked parts of watching it. It was funny at times. Bonk, you liked the dog shaking.
Yeah, it was funny.
All right, Bonk, thank you so much for joining me each and every week here on Painting the
Stream. You're welcome.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Follow us at Pan the Stream. Give us the 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song. We'll see you all next week.
Bye.